Welcome to Link to Hope, a podcast from Kentucky Cancer Link. I'm your host, Ben Keith. Until there's a cure for cancer, Kentuckians need hope today. Link to Hope is a monthly podcast featuring experts discussing ways to remove barriers for Kentuckians in need of screening, diagnosis, and treatment for cancer. In this episode, we're talking about the changing technology and innovation in cancer detection. Our guest is Dr. Whitney Jones, a well-known cancer advocate in Kentucky and the Senior Medical Director at GRAIL. Before we get to our interview, I'd like to bring in Melissa Carr with Kentucky Cancer Link to talk about today's episode. Melissa, I'm extra excited about today's episode with our good friend, Dr. Jones. We had him on when we first began this podcast many years ago, and I'm glad to welcome him back to talk about something that we're very passionate about, which is increasing access to innovative technologies and helping people, you know, understand what conditions they may have and treat cancer much earlier. You know, what about this topic really interests you, and how do you bring this back to our feature around Link to Hope?
Well, like you said, we've been able to work with Dr. Jones in many areas, and we've seen him just really be a champion for making sure that there are, you know, additional early detection tools for various types of cancer, if it's a screening program here in Kentucky or on the national level with the multi-cancer early detection. And I think it's just important for access for, you know, people that want to be able to take better care of themselves, and it's just great to have another option to help our folks in Kentucky.
Yeah, I'm particularly excited about this topic. You know, something that we've been following closely. As you'll hear, you know, there has been legislation pending at the federal level, and you know, in this time of hyper-partisanship, this is one of the few issues that has true bipartisan support. And so that makes me feel good about the work that we're doing. And then, you know, I think, Melissa, from your standpoint as well, you know, it makes you feel good about, you know, improving access to innovative treatment, innovative options out there, and helping, you know, people live longer and understand, you know, what cancers they may have and how to best treat that.
Exactly. And it takes a village, and we're happy to have him on the team, and look forward to hearing the conversation.
Well, without further ado, let's hear from Dr. Jones. Dr. Jones, welcome back to the show. Pleased to have you here again. Always love having conversations with you and Kentucky Cancer Link. I know you all have a long history together, so thank you for being here again today.
It's really a pleasure. It's an honor. Thank you.
So speaking of that, you've had a long history of advocating for improved access to cancer detection through your work both as a physician and a founder of the Colon Cancer Prevention Project. This is a new journey for you, your role with GRAIL. Can you talk a little bit about what attracted you to this, and you know, what you see your role in an organization like that?
Well, my stated role is a senior medical director. I'm one of four medical directors across the country, and you know, really, it's a great story. I called GRAIL back in 2021, and I had read some papers about their technology and the potential for the technology, and some really excellent, well done articles that were white papers, not from GRAIL, just from other people looking at this technology. And I thought, well, if this is real, then I need to be part of this, because this is the biggest potential paradigm shift in cancer control that I will have lived through in my life. And so I actually was I was feeling a little spicy that day. I reached out to GRAIL, called them up, and within a couple of months, we had struck a deal, and I've been honored to work with them for the last 2 years.
That's terrific. And I've never known you to be spicy. So let's take a quick step back and just talk a little bit about your history. How did you first get engaged in cancer advocacy work and founding the Colon Cancer Prevention Project?
Well, I'm a gastroenterologist. I finished all my training finally in 93, 94, moved back to Louisville. I'm a therapeutic biliary endoscopist. So I took care of the worst cancers that you could have in your GI tract: esophageal cancer, stomach cancer, pancreatic disease, liver cancer. I was an interim transplant director for the University of Louisville. So I think I saw some of the worst of the worst. And colon cancer wasn't really on my radar. But in 2003, I saw three individuals who presented to me so I could decompress their liver, which was blocked from metastatic colorectal cancer. All three of those people were well above the age of screening. All three of those people had great insurance. And unfortunately, all three of those people had never received colorectal cancer screening and thus, you know, presented with advanced disease. And so it was at that moment that I stepped back and I began to study a little bit what was going on with colon cancer. And we were 49th in the nation in screening. We were number one in incidence and we were number one in mortality. And so I decided to take some action and I put together a nonprofit organization that I thought would take me a couple of years. And here we are 20 years later. With the most improved state in the nation, I might add, in colorectal cancer screening statistics. But it's a lifelong journey, and it's been a pleasure to work with, and particularly the people I get to work with, not just what we've done.
I think it's really interesting to, you know, over the last 20 years or so, take a look at how awareness around screenings has changed, but also innovation and technology. And, you know, I think your new company, Grail, is a really good example of how that has happened. Can you talk a little bit about the technology that you're now working with and, you know, how that came about?
Right. Well, the technology is based on a concept called cell-free DNA, and it actually originated with non-invasive prenatal testing for women who were pregnant. In the old days, we would have to get an amniocentesis if someone was high risk and they had a question. You'd have to put a needle in their abdomen and pull it out. Eventually, we were able to utilize advances in technology, both computers as well as DNA sequencing, to where we could draw the blood from the mom's blood, and enough of that DNA from the fetus and the placenta leaked into the mom's blood that we could actually differentiate the mom's blood from the fetus's blood. And it was during that concept and that process that our scientist found 10 women out of 125,000 that had extremely abnormal DNA signals. And in fact, the concern was they had cancer, and they did, in fact. All 10 of those women were diagnosed with cancer after they had delivered healthy children. And that was the aha moment, if you will, that we really understood that we could find cancer signals in patients' blood before symptoms developed.
So how do you take, you know, that idea, that kind of emerging technology, that aha moment, and turn that into a movement to really focus on finding ways to detect cancer early and raise awareness about the need to continue to treat cancer perhaps before most people would even know that they had cancer.
Right, absolutely. And again, I like to see this as an expansion of what we already do in cancer control, because we already do screenings, but unfortunately we're only screening for 30% of cancers, breast, cervical, lung, and colon. Yet we know that we can intervene in those cancers, and in colon and cervical, we can actually find precancerous lesions and remove them. So I think early detection is well seated. The issue was that we were only screening for 30% of cancer incidence rates, and the other cancers had no screening that was available, and other cancers are somewhat less common than the ones we currently screen for. So it's very unlikely that any of those are going to get their own single cancer screening. People have been trying for years to determine ovarian cancer screening assays, et cetera. And so the really great thing about Grail and this technology is that we are able to identify this common cancer signal that's common to all cancers. And then utilizing our technology, which we can talk about if you want, which is methylation-based, we're actually able to accurately identify where that cancer signal is coming from. And we base this on very, very, very high specificity, which means very few false positives. And so the technology itself, the DNA sequencing is amazing. But the other part that's amazing is the artificial intelligence component. And when you put those two together, you're able to do multi-cancer, much like we used to have radios and telephones, and we put those together and we have cell phones. So it's really a synergistic technology and a leap forward.
Let's dive a little bit further into the technology, because I find that really fascinating. And I think I've kind of a two-part question for you. One is, can you walk us through the technology? What is it? And then the second part, you know, how has the technology changed that's allowing us to do this now versus, you know, where we were maybe 20 years ago when you were first diving into this area?
Great. Well, the best example I can, again, let's just go back to the cell phone, right? You know, think of the original Motorola brick phone, right? I mean, when you first get across that finish line, it's not where you'll be in 20 years. But essentially what's happened is DNA sequencing used to be a rather expensive business. We finished the Human Genome Project in about 2003, cost billions and billions of dollars, used to be thousands of dollars, even millions to do a single genome for a person. And now that cost has been pushed down below $500. And so an amazing improvement in that piece. So with that came not only the ability to do it more inexpensively, but also to do it more in depth. The second big issue is that most of us think about DNA like we learned in high school, the code ACTG and the little double helix. But it turns out the code is only one part of the genomic structure. There's actually a layer around the DNA code called the epigenome, which is changed by small chemical alterations to the DNA that essentially silences certain proteins from being produced or amplifies certain proteins from being produced. In fact, your eye, your retinal cell, and your liver cell have the exact same DNA in the code. But why are they so different? And it's because of the epigenome, which is the influencer and the modulator of that code that's written for the entire human genome. We also share about 40% of our DNA with bananas, right? So there's a lot of commonality in there. So that's the DNA piece. So understanding and being able to sequence deeper and really understanding the impact of methylation, which is, and at the end of the day, cancer is a disease of the DNA. It's DNA gone wrong. And so if you want to understand the cancer journey, understanding the DNA is part of that piece. The second part is that computing piece. And again, utilizing not just really strong computing power, but developing algorithms where you actually train computers to recognize this is cancer, this is not cancer. This looks like cancer, this is not cancer. And I liken it to a QR code a little bit, where to you and I, it probably looks the same every time. But when you train computers, they can begin to recognize these signals that are below our piece. And so But they don't do it on their own. Humans, you know, program those computers. You know, they work through those algorithms. So it's really an amazing synergy. And you know, I think all of us have to undergo some education again, particularly in the medical world, to understand the impact of the epigenome.
Speaking of education, I'd love to bring Melissa into the conversation and chat a little bit, because one of the things that we talk about frequently with Kentucky Cancer Link is, you know, is access and awareness. So, you know, this isn't the first time you all have worked together, you know, with Colon Cancer Prevention Project and Kentucky Cancer Link. You talked a good bit about, you know, how do you increase awareness about colorectal cancer and screenings. And so this is a new technology on top of that. Can you talk a little bit about how you work with some of the groups like Kentucky Cancer Link to spread the word on this? And then I'll invite Melissa to jump in and talk a little bit about how what she's seeing with some of her groups and their interest in new technology.
Right. Well, I want to say, you know, again, I didn't disclose, but obviously I work for GRAIL. I have an equity interest in GRAIL. And so all of my work around multi-cancer early detection so far has been under that umbrella of GRAIL. I've been very careful not to mix my old job and my ongoing job in cancer prevention and colorectal with this one. So most of my interactions are with healthcare systems, providers. I meet sometimes in Kentucky with legislators. We've got great support for the Multi-Cancer Early Detection Screening Act in the last session. We'll talk about that a little later. But again, I'm not based in Kentucky. I go all across the country. I get to meet with the Mayo Clinic and the City of Hope and Dana-Farber Institute and, you know, great universities around the nation, because they are all interested in a paradigm shift, right? Because we're sort of stuck. We only screen for these cancers. We're cutting down smoking a little bit. We haven't figured out what to do with obesity. And we've gotten better in treatment, but not in a way that's going to really change the paradigm dramatically. It's incremental. And so really, I feel like I'm the translator between the amazing science and the clinical research of the folks who are working it, and then the people who are eventually going to be the end users, health systems, insurance companies, providers, and the population.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from our perspective as a nonprofit organization, our goal is access. So we've really been, you know, paying attention to, you know, the dialogue that comes down and the literature and how things are going, you know, on the science side. But then we're really invested in, of course, the policy side, because that's when we're going to be addressing coverage issues to have it be an option for a larger group than just a select few that maybe have the correct insurance and things like that. So, and it's just another tool in the toolbox of how, you know, cancer can be detected. You know, we do have wonderful screening, you know, options available, but, you know, as these new things come down the pipe, it is just really, really encouraging just to know that, you know, people that won't maybe go in for, you know, a more invasive test potentially could, you know, agree to a blood test that might be just, again, another way that they could, you know, find that early detection to not have to go through the more in-depth treatments and things like that. So we've just really been glad to just know that we have, you know, someone that we have worked with for so long with Dr. Jones, and just knowing that he has Kentucky's best interest in heart, regardless of where he is in the country, you know, doing his amazing speeches and that. So
All right.
Well, it's been a great kind of, you know, collaboration in that respect.
Yeah, I want to bounce off that because it's a really great point, you know, that access is key. But I want to make sure people know that multi-cancer early detection testing is here to supplement current screenings, not to replace them. So our current screenings that we do have very high sensitivity and are designed not to miss many cancers, but they also produce a lot of false positives. So multi-cancer is really focused on those cancers that have no screening. In addition, we'll definitely pick up a lot of the cancers that we screen for, and that's mainly because about 25% of people don't get screened for cervical, breast, and colon, and then lung cancer screening, obviously. We have lots of challenges to date, and then opportunities on the basis of those challenges to improve it. And we've got some great partners down at UK and Tim Mullett. They've done a great job of, we're the most increased state in lung cancer screening in the nation, I believe, due to the work that's been going on. And that's great because we are far and away the number one state in the nation for lung cancer incidence and mortality. In fact, that's what drives Kentucky's nation-leading cancer rates, unfortunately.
You bring up a really interesting point, and one that I'd like to talk about. And I know that you're doing great work on the national scale, but you also have a strong roots in Kentucky and a deep knowledge of some of the challenges, some of the health challenges that we face. How does multi-cancer early detection, or how can multi-cancer early detection impact Kentucky's health over the long run?
Well, the biggest thing about multi-cancer early detection, and again, my personal opinion, and I think I would speak for Grail, I think this will not only get across the finish line for coverage, but I think it will become a dominant way we screen. So I really see this as potentially the greatest lifting of burden of cancer since we started the war on cancer in the 70s, and we peaked in our cancer incidence in the early 90s. So where I really see this is happening is bringing more people into the screening game because the barrier is going to be lower. Like, how many people are going to go through the complex issue of going for one cancer screening on this day, and then they got to pick it up and 3 months later go to another place and get another screening? We have to do that. And again, a woman smoker might have to undergo four different screenings on four different days. This is going to allow people, number one, it's a blood test, and people are much more likely to do blood tests than all the other pieces, I believe. And then secondly, it screens for multiple cancers simultaneously with an extremely low false positive rate, meaning our test is designed and engineered not to spin off lots of false positives. So we're not going to overburden the healthcare system with overdiagnosis. It's really designed to be efficient and work within the current health system. And you know, we may not think about it because we live in Kentucky. We think everybody's got cancer all the time. In fact, your rate of having cancer on any given year between 50 and 75 is only about 1%. But you add that 1% up year after year after year, and all of a sudden it's 30% lifetime risk, 40%. So the fact that we can really narrow down those true positives and false positives and in a super efficient way doesn't overburden the system. And again, allows us to expand the number of cancers we're screening for. I mean, who's not scared of ovarian cancer if you're a woman? Who is not frightened of pancreatic cancer regardless? You know, head and neck cancer is on the rise dramatically because of not only smoking, but HPV-associated issues. So I think we've got this scenario where we've been wanting and looking for a change. We never were able to cross that technological threshold until the advancements in those two pieces, computing and DNA sequencing. And fortunately, I think Grail's at the head of the pack when it comes to bringing this technology to market.
Let's talk about bringing this technology to market, because I think one thing that people don't always understand in healthcare is it's one thing to have innovation, it's another thing to have access. Something that Melissa was talking a little bit about before. You know, Grail and MCED is clearly moving forward very rapidly on the innovation and technology front. Can you talk a little bit about, just briefly, about the policy front? You know, what do we need to do in order to make sure that everybody has access to this kind of testing? you know, you referenced earlier, we've had some strong support from some Kentucky legislators, both at the state and federal level. So, you know, I'd love to just hear a little bit more from you on what we need to do to make sure that people actually have access to this.
Right. And I want to start by just saying every time there's new advanced biotechnology, it always feels like it's an expander of gaps in care. Because, again, if you just think about breast cancer genetic testing, right, BRCA mutations, the Angelina Jolie effect, when those tests came out, they were between $5,000 and $15,000 each for two genes. So they were not accessible to everyone. Now those same tests are a couple of $100 and covered by insurance. And so I just think that trajectory is important to know out there. So I think the key thing about bringing it to market from the GRAIL standpoint is, you know, we're out in the wild now. We've done over 100,000 tests. But the whole vision of GRAIL is not to provide cancer prevention for people who are well off. It's to help the people who are the worst off, the ones who have the highest cancer rates. An African-American man has 300 times, 3X, 300% increase, the risk of cancer over an Asian woman. And we know that our burden in Appalachia, as well as some of our underserved African-American and Hispanic communities, is huge. And so the whole vision for GRAIL is that this test really become democratized and utilized across the entire spectrum of cancer, meaning bringing people into cancer who haven't been screened, particularly these disparate populations, and not only bringing in more people, Medicare, age is the number one risk factor for cancer. Okay, that's number one. Medicaid in Kentucky, where we have some of our most difficult health statistics. But again, leveling that playing field so that everyone gets that same opportunity to get ahead of cancer, finding it earlier when we can have a chance for a cure.
And, you know, I think we saw last year that our policymakers are very interested in seeing this across the finish line. Policy is never easy, but you know, the MCED Act last year did have, if I remember correctly, more than a majority of the members of the House as sponsors of the bill, not just supporters, but co-sponsors of the bill. So I think that shows us the direction that we're moving forward in. And, you know, groups like Kentucky Cancer Link and other cancer organizations in Kentucky have kind of rallied together to help raise awareness about that, both with our policymakers, but with members of the public as well. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, some of the momentum you all are feeling there and what that might mean for the future of innovation?
Right. Well, absolutely. I mean, I think the momentum. We had 313 sponsors, you know, in the House and Senate last year, which is really, truly a bipartisan piece if there's ever such a thing anymore. And so I think we're already back at it. We've reintroduced the bill because it flips over every 2 years in Congress, and we're already gaining and gathering those signatures. So what some of the folks on the listening audience can do is call your House representative and call your state senator and ask them to sponsor this. Because just like the people who are high risk for cancer, the African-American men, you know, lower socioeconomic issues, Kentucky as a state is more at risk. We have more stake in this than states with lower cancer burdens. And so I think it's incumbent of all of us to become our own advocates to make sure that we're pushing this across. And this legislation is not to get GRAIL or Gallery or the company that I work for across. It's to get the technology across the platform. You know, we welcome competition. We welcome lots of people trying to solve this problem simultaneously, because that's going to be great for people at the end of the day. And I do think the technology, though, is we're focusing in this screening area. This technological platform is going to span the entire cancer continuum, all the way from finding it early to treating it better, to understanding when recurrence happens at the earliest stage so we can get on top of it and address it. So I just think I look at the new era will be much like CAT scans were when they came in 30, 40 years ago. We won't recognize in practice medicine without this in the cancer space.
And I think Melissa can probably talk about that a little bit as well. You know, I think as technology has become more mainstream, whether it is the colon cancer tests in a box, or it is just more awareness about, different kinds of testing, lung cancer testing, colon cancer testing, that you see an uptick in people, you know, partaking in that and hopefully getting treated earlier. You know, Melissa, what do you all see from your perspective on how, as innovation changes, people pick up and get more testing and get earlier diagnosis?
Well, the colon cancer screening and prevention program is a great example of that, just by, again, expanding options for people. And while Dr. Jones mentioned that, it's not a replacement, we always tell people that a FIT and a Cologuard are not a replacement for, the gold standard of a colonoscopy, but it is a very, good way to get some of those issues that might be lurking addressed to then move forward with the completion colonoscopy. So just, I think people like having options. They like being able to be in control a bit of what their healthcare looks like. And I think that if they are able to have these conversations with their providers to understand what options are available, just to kind of get them into the door and ease some of the burden financially, or, even not having a person to take them to a colonoscopy, then if they're average risk, a Cologuard or a FIT is super ideal for that. And just trying to have an extra tool in the toolbox so that people, I think it's empowering for people to feel like they don't all have to be corralled into one lane like everybody else. So it's just that access piece and empowerment that's big for us. So.
And again, that goes back a little bit to the legislation, right? So it's called the Medicare MCED National Coverage Determination. So that's speaking specifically to Medicare. And believe it or not, you actually have to have an act of Congress to add a new screening program to Medicare coverage. And so MCEDs are a completely new. But we had to have a single act for breast. We had to have one for cervical. We had to have one for colon and lung. And so this act is essential for people who are in the Medicare space who have the largest risk of cancer due to their age. It is essential for those guys to understand that they are the highest risk, and this test is going to help them. This technology is going to help them, manage their cancer risks. And so I think sometimes they're politically very active. I would encourage them, again, to get on the horn, write a letter is the best thing to do, and let them know you're a constituent and that you'd like to get some additional assistance with cancer detection and prevention.
It's always important for people to be their own best advocates. And if you see something out there that you want change, you can actually be a part of that change.
Oh, and they read those notes. I'm telling you, they probably may only get 20, 30, 100 letters from people on a particular issue. And if those are stacked up one versus the other, they're absolutely going to take that into account.
Yeah. I'd like to talk a little bit about, you're a physician. You come to the MCED world with kind of a unique perspective. There's plenty of science and there's behind this, but, you kind of come at this from both the physician and the advocate standpoint. What do you want your peers, your other physicians, to know about this technology, MCEDs, and the impact that it'll have on Kentucky?
Well, I think the impact is going to be huge, right? And I think that what physicians need to know is that, first of all, it's been really hard for physicians the last 15 years. Ever since the AHA went into effect, they've been struggling through these electronic health records. I mean, everybody knows what it's like to sit in the doctor's office while they're typing, right? And nobody can say that we think that interpersonal reaction's gotten better. Then, of course, we had the COVID over the last several years that really dramatically impacted. And so I think doctors and healthcare professionals are carrying a lot of weight. So what I want to tell them is, even though this is new technology, and I think it's important to be skeptical and curious and really understand how it works, because you've got to be the guardian for your patients, understand that this is going to expand what you're already doing. And it's going to do it in a way that, again, you're going to have to learn about it. We call it a simple blood test. I would argue the blood test is the only simple thing about it. The rest of it's a very complex part in the laboratory. But what it's going to do is it's going to expand cancer early detection, which is a cornerstone of cancer control. Once it's met your thresholds, and once you understand it and accept it, develop a systematic approach to delivering that message and that availability to the patients that you serve. And so I think there's three things. Number one, more cancers because we're broader. Number two, the possibility of detecting them at earlier stages when they're asymptomatic and can be treated. But it only works when it's implemented systematically. And so I would say to guys, reach out, make sure it meets your thresholds. It's not a burden. It's going to be a lifter of burden for your patients. And, we adopt new things all the time.
Well, and I think that, you know, treatment has become so far advanced with being very singular in how they, you know, treat various tumors. And so now you have stage four patients that are, you know, have so much hope because they do just drill down to what that tumor looks like and treat it specifically. So I think if they're able to detect that earlier with an early detection and then still, you know, use this wonderful technology for treatment, I mean, cancer's obliterated. So I just think that it just being able to see the things work in tandem and really leaning into the science and the innovation of where we're going is just, talk about link to hope. I mean, there it is. So thank you for all the work you're doing.
Oh, thanks to the Grail scientist who conceptualized this, put it together. Again, it's, you know, half of it's bio and the other half is tech. You know, these biological computational data scientists are just absolutely amazing. But again, they make it simple for guys like me in the clinical world. This test comes back usually with a binary result, either positive for a signal or not. If it comes back positive, it actually can direct you to where the cancer signal is coming from so you can focus a workup and really be more efficient. So I think it's going to change. I think it's going to change the cancer world, and I think it will be the first of many changes as we really build a bridge to what we all want to see as our new cancer future. The unfortunate thing about building a bridge is you don't get to drive across it the day you decide you need it. Yeah, you have to get the architects. You have to do the permitting. You have to go through a process. And so I want people, and again, not just doctors, but healthcare administrators and leaders, to understand that no state will benefit more from bringing this technology in and figuring out creative ways that are apply this technology across the entire spectrum of people they serve, all the way from those who can afford it way at the top to people who maybe aren't doing any cancer screening right now or who are even uninsured. So those are our challenges in Kentucky. But again, I think this will be the greatest burden of cancer lifting with this technological platform that we've seen since I've been in practice. That's why I'm all in.
So speaking of all in, I usually end the conversation with asking people what keeps them up at night. You are way too optimistic of a person to do that. So I'm going to reverse that. What excites you in the morning when you wake up and you think about the future of this technology, the future of cancer treatment and diagnosis, and overall the future of Kentucky's health?
Well, first of all, my favorite thing is prevention, i.e. the Colon Cancer Prevention Project, because prevention is the number one thing that we can do. If we can figure out how to address smoking, how we can understand diet better, how we can understand how to use technology. I do have something that keeps me up, though. I'm going to get to your question. What keeps me up at night is us not having as high rates of screening and health, other health comes in Appalachia. And then I also want to make people aware that we have a huge onset of early age onset colorectal cancer in America. Almost 1 in 5 colon cancers are now diagnosed under age 50. We are the third most leading state in this. So we're going to do a better job of educating people in their 20s and in their 30s to understand signs and symptoms and their family history and when they should be screened earlier. And so, you know, that still keeps me up. But what excites me every morning is the potential that we can transform Kentucky broadly for all cancers, as we've been able to in many cases. And I would say colon cancer is probably the best example of this, where we've gone from 49th in the nation to 20th in screening. We're saving almost between cases that are prevented or people who don't die because of earlier stage diagnosis, almost 1,000 people a year. So I don't know who those three people were today. Did you know who they were, Melissa? I don't know who didn't get it today, but I'm glad they didn't. That's what keeps driving me, because I think we can do that and more.
Well, we're fortunate to have you, Dr. Jones, in Kentucky, but more importantly, we are thrilled to be able to share you on the national stage to help make sure that not just all Kentuckians, but everybody has access to innovative technology like this. So thank you. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for walking us through the technology. It's really incredible. And for helping to share, you know, the path forward, the very bright path forward for making sure that more people get the opportunity to have early diagnosis.
Right. It's an honor to be here with you guys, and what a great partnership with Kentucky Cancer Link and Melissa and her team. We have really, you know, they are so critical to what we do. So it's an honor to be with you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Likewise.